I will start by say thank you to Stefan. That was my help guy for preparing stuff, and it was very complicated because I'm very chaotic when I have to prepare slide. So thanks a lot for your review. So I'm Xavier Nostang. I work at Tardis. We are heavily involved into the. We try to be involved into the maintenance of the development of OCaml language and its ecosystem. So if you have any project related to OCaml, let's chat. We can also call us, well, subtype, the OCaml consultant. So we are working on stuff. We have some experience in software design, distributed system, formal method, build system, editor tooling, and virtualization. There is some project in which we were involved. I just put project with logo, but there is very interesting project like Merlin, which is the editor server for OCaml. And if you are interested into MirageOS, there will be a presentation from Anes at 5 p.m. And it makes a kind of echo with the keynote because it's about digital governance. And I was wondering if your goal is to be owner of your own technology, you need to start with a technology from your country. And so you may notice to my accent that I come from Belgium, but I live in France. So I think that we should rewrite every government software in OCaml, which is a very decent language. And so I made a double mention to Mirage because I guess that it was make it possible because of the flexibility of the module language. Now I know that it's currently changed, but at the beginning, it was because the OCaml module language was very interesting. So let's go for a very pompous presentation with this cool name, a crash course on the OCaml module language. And if you have any question, I don't have time, so I will answer at the end of the presentation. So why this presentation? I'd be cool because the OCaml module language is so cool. To be honest, I think that it's one of the 100 reasons to choose OCaml as a main language, the module language. And in fact, it's a very old subject that explains why some interaction with the module language can be a little bit complicated. And there was a lot of exciting work recently. So I think it's nice to talk about the module language now. So it's not a tutorial on OCaml, so I will use syntax to illustrate some examples. But the goal is not to deep dive into the syntax and just to understand the big picture of the module language. Yes, my goal is to share my passion about OCaml and the module language. So yes, the plan. we will briefly overview some features related to the OCaml module language. And after that, I will show some very specific examples. During the review, they told me that yeah, there is no real world example. But for me, I trust you to be able to manage this not real world example to make real world software using OCaml. So I start my understanding of the OCaML module language, reading this excellent thesis called Understanding and Evolving the ML Module System. And I will usually put paper that I use to make an intuition about what I will present. So OCaML. So it's an ML language, strict, functional, imperative, with a very powerful type system, with regular things like ADTs, but not regular things like GADTs, with raw polymorphism for polymorphic variant and object, type inference, principal type inference, so we can always try to find the most general type for any expression, an advanced module system, an object language, which is surprisingly beautiful. For me, it's the best object language in a static elite type language that do not make the confusion between inheritance and subtyping with structural subtyping. And we have user-defined effect as a core language feature. It's safe, expressive, efficient, and beautiful. And if you are interested into user-defined effect, multicore, and stuff like that, there will be at 1 p.m. a very nice tutorial about multicore OCaml by Karin and Suda, and you should attend to it. So I use OCaml for everything. Every side project I can do, I will use OCaml. And it's not because I like OCaML, it's just because it's probably the perfect choice to write any software It's very cool. You can write everything. It can compile to JavaScript, WebAssembly, and stuff like that. It's a beautiful language with good tooling, good libraries, and great success stories. You can go on hocaml.org to see a lot of beautiful success stories. And if you don't trust me, Paul Elliott will give a presentation about the Undo Monad, but it was a tool built in context of his slideshow presentation, and it's the next presentation. So you should stay in the room to see the following talk. So for me, it's a very sweet spot between Haskell and Rust, or HoxCaml, which is a mix between HoxCaml and Rust. And you can have more safety because of a good tooling. And if you don't trust me, there is a presentation about formal specification and HoxCaml. So let's go into, let's talk about module system. So what is modularity? There's a lot of explanation about modularity. It's a hot topic. It's popular in every kind of language, but there is not a lot of language that handle properly modularity. So the main idea is to be able to split everything into very small black box that can interact. And the goal is to make stuff understandable and reusable. So it enables independent development. We can reasoning about the structure of the program. And we can have reusability. Usually, we use interface abstraction, namespaces, and composition to make modularity available. So there is many different approaches to modularity, and it differs depending on the language. So you can use function and usually parametric polymorphism. You can use libraries and package, build system. Sometimes you need to use a build system to manage modularity, like in the JVM world. You can use object. Type classes or module system. And module system is what was used by HoxCaml and SML. So what are modules in HoxCaml? So a module just it can be a collection of type, a collection of binding, set of top level effect, and a collection of submodules. They can be sealed by an interface. But since HoxCaml is a principally inferred language, you can infer the interface from the implementation. But since we are trusting in type safety, we prefer to have our own interface, and we will see quickly an example. And so we can describe it or describe their usefulness in many levels. So it can be a business unit, a collection of functions, compilation unit, or it can manage domain-driven expression or data structure. So in HoxCaml, there is a very subtlety. Every file is a module. So every ML file is an implementation, and every MLI file is an interface. I know that for people that like to put the tip and the implementation, it's always surprising and maybe a little bit irritating. A friend that comes from Haskell to HoxCaml say, "Oh, we need to repeat types twice and stuff like that." But I think that it's usually very useful because it's allowed to have separate and incremental compilation. And so, for example, I know that Rust is a very beautiful language for making very, very, very low-level application, but the compilation time can be very, very high. And in HoxCaml, everything compiles smoothly and quickly thanks to separate compilation. But for the presentation, we will just focus on the module language part, so we will not speak about build artifact and stuff like that. Okay? So here is the first example. We have a module stack, which is just a list with three functions, empty, just an empty list, it produces an empty stack. We have an add function and a pop function, okay? It's readable, yeah? It's the beauty of HoxCaml. and so we can access to every member of the module using a dot notation. So stack.empty, return an empty list, and stack add 10, unstack empty, will produce a stack with one element with 10 inside. And this module will be inferred in this module signature. So it's just the interface counterparty of the implementation. But it's very sad because we are leaking implementation detail. We don't need to know that a stack is a list and our implementation is leaking. We do not use the t-alpha type. So it's very sad because we know abstraction is very powerful. It enforces invariant. So there is some solution. The first one is just to use an ascription. So we hide the implementation of the type saying that it's abstract. So it's just a way to say it's a black box. I know that there is a type, but I cannot build it or deconstruct it outside of the module. And after that, we can change our type definition to say that instead of dealing with a list, we are dealing with a T of A, and we totally hide the fact that a stack is a list, and it's perfect because we don't want to leak implementation detail. And with that implementation, we can deal with encapsulation because every function repeat in the signature will be exported, but we can have private method inside the body of a module, and we just need to not export it inside the signature. And it's also a great place to put documentation, to have a clear separation between signature and structure. Since T is abstract, we can only use the function make, or here is another example of positive int. I guess that everyone here agree that abstraction is very cool and we should use abstraction when it's possible. But here is another example, positive int, and it's just an int, but we hide the fact that it's an integer. So we need to use make to enforce the invariant that our positive int is positive. And we can hide this very useful function is positive, because since it's in the module positive int, we don't need to expose a function is positive because everything should be positive. It's a first way to see how to deal with encapsulation with the module language. And I said that we can also use private. So the idea of private, it looks like abstraction, but abstraction will always hide the implementation of the type. With private, you continue to say that, okay, my type T is an int, but since it's private, I cannot build type T, which is a private int, a private abbreviation of int, outside of the module. So you can still use function related to integer on your function, but you cannot build stuff outside of the module. It's called read-only type. So we have an interesting symmetry. So here is a very simple function, f, that will just return 10. We do not have any ascription. And as a module, we have the counterpart module f with just one member, x, that return 10. So it's a simple assignment without any ascription. In a KML, we can attach types on the value language. So here we just add an ascription. Obviously, the ascription should match the implementation. And we can also attach ascription to module. So here I have a module f constrained by the signature that expose a member x, which has a type int. And in the body, I still have my module let x equal 10. And it's one of the main important point of the presentation is the fact that usually ML language like SML, MuskML, or OCaml are the inclusion of two different language, value language, the regular one that we use to make software, and a language of module. And two languages share similarities, but also share difference. So they share difference, it makes no sense. So we will just dissect at the syntactic level module components. So this is just a module expression. Here, the F, it's called a module pass. We can have a module type. And after that, we have a module items, which is the list of the components of the module. Okay? So why it's useful? Another example is the fact that we can reuse interface. So for example, here I know that a lot of people hate OCaml for one reason. It's the fact that there is a different set of operators for integer and for float. For me, it's not a big deal, in fact. You can just locally open float and having regular operator. But for a lot of people, it's very rude. Two different operators for different types. This is so sad. Let's imagine that we want to mutualize that kind of operation. So we have module float with a t equal float and a module int with type t equal int. And we have plus minus prod div. It's nice, but it's a little bit sad because we need to repeat the interface. And usually in the value language, we have user-defined type and user-defined effect. We can also have user-defined signature, so we can enforce modularity and reusability using one module type, which is a type which is not associated to any module when it's defined. Sometimes it's called transient signatures. And we can define a type key and implementing a common interface for float and integer. So I can see that now my float is sealed by the num interface and int is sealed by the num interface too. So if you are following the presentation, you will say that, it's changed a little bit the semantic of my program because my type T is abstract. Because since it's defined before being linked to a concrete signature, to a concrete structure, I cannot speculate over the type that will be attached to T. But you have a very easy syntax for that. We can say, okay, I will constraint my structure using the num signature, and I can use this function with type T equal int. So it's a way to de-abstract the type abstracted by the reusable signature. Okay? And we can use with module, you can substitute module, and there is something called destructive substitution, which is, okay, I will say that this type T here is, in this example, an int, but I remove the type int so I can compose multiple modules with just one type definition. There's also a way to, so you know, there is module type and module signature, and they look alike, but when you start writing XML, you can have an error when you try to use a module as a module type or a module type as a module. It's different because module type are type, and signature are not, you cannot reuse the signature of another module to a regular module. So let's imagine that you have a module list. I cannot say, okay, I will handle the tip list on this other type, like struct, like a stack. And for that, we have this complicated succession of XML keyword, which is module type of list, that can recover a module as a module type. So here I use module type tlist equal module type of list. And so now my module type tlist is the module type with the API of list. Okay? What an expressivity. So we have value and types. So values are structure, types are signature and module types. So the next step is obviously having function in the module language. And so in the module language, functions are called functors that can be a little bit tricky. I give a presentation about module at DevOps conference in France, and I use the example functor to explain how to use functor using functor. So it was not very pedagogical. I know that some people try to find the clear correspondence between the categorical theoretic term. I think that it's an ad hoc justification. The name functor is historical. And it's not very productive to find correlation between functor and functors. So now we will talk about functors. So a functor is a function in the module level. So it goes from structure to structure. It takes a module, or multiple modules, because in fact in XML, functor are high order function. So you can return a functor. So since you can return a functor, by partial application, you can have more than one parameter to a functor. So the main idea is I give you a module and I produce a new module. Okay. So here is an example. I use the module type S, and I expect to that module to implement a type T and a function compare, and I made a mistake because it's not TT, but it should be TT int. Sorry. And the idea is to write, for example, a module infix, which is a functor that takes a module called M. So it's the function parameter M, constrained by the signature S. So I need to have a module that at least have the type T and the function compare without the mistake about T. And I will produce a new structure, and I can have infix operator for my module M, okay? So I think that I put some very small highlighting to see the correspondence. And I can make a module U, which will apply the module int, and in the standard library of XML, there is a function compare and a type T related to int. And I will have a new module U with a lot of infix operators. And we can see that we have structural subtyping on the module level. So if you have a module which is bigger, like the int module, you can give a subtype, and it will work, and it will infer the following signatures. So a module with all of our infix operator, but with integer, since we do not re-export the manifest type, we have regular operators. Okay? And here I made a mistake in my slide. Here I use a very long syntactic approach to a functor, but it can be simplified with this syntax. So module, the name of the module, and after that just a set of parameters that return a struct. And we can also attach ascription, we can annotate modules. And here is the example. I say I have module f that take a and b, and that returns something with the that need to be sealed by the signature S3. Okay? Cool. So I said that a functor is a function in the module level from structure to structure. So we have an obvious question: can we return type at the functor level? So not, but since we have a module type, we can return a functor with just one module type inside the body of the module that we return. So here is an example. I have the module f, which is a functor that takes a module m and a module s, and I return a module type t. So I return a module with a module type t with inside a val x, which is constrained by the module that I give as an argument. Okay? What a powerful module language. Awesome. And in fact, this example is a very naive way to touch with our fingers the dependent nature of the type system inside the OCaml module system. But it's not very interesting for this presentation. So there is also one sentence I can read on Hacker News or stuff like that when people are speaking about OCaml. They say that, oh, but you know, OCaml does not have a Higer candidate type, which is totally wrong. There is no, there is, but there was no Higer candidate type at the value level, but there were Higer candidate type or Higer candidate polymorphism at the module level. And I can give you an example. We have this module type called monad, which is the core functionality of something that we call a monad, or a Kleist-Lie triple. And we can have a, speaking about functor in terms of monad is very fun, but we can have a functor that will concrete a monad that take the module type monad to produce a more complete API. And to be totally fair, this type is totally an Higer candidate type. And if you do not agree, you're wrong. And in fact, the reason why we have the capability to quantify our type constructor, it's because in a very pompous way, we can say that the OCaml module language is a kind of type lambda calculus called system F omega. And there is this excellent paper, Heffing Modules, that demonstrate it very well. And we will see that in the evolution of the module language, this paper and that kind of encoding will be used to improve the module system. So there is HKT in OCaml, so cool. So now we have function, functors, no, value, types, and function. The next step is obviously, the main question is, what's the difference between the value language and the module language, except the number of keywords? And in fact, I said that OCaml, the value language is principally inferred. You have inference everywhere, and it's so cool. In the module language, it's a little bit more complicated. You need more annotation, it's a little bit more verbose, and it's mostly because the theory behind the notion of typing modules is very old in OCaml. And years after, we had this excellent paper called 1ML, Core and Module United, and the main idea was to use existential type to be able to describe properly modules, but OCaml is a very old language. So it was not under this theory. So we can see that if you like a little bit type theory as a demi-functional programmer like me, you can see that we have a mix of types and terms. And usually having mix between types and terms is a little bit complicated and it can reach to very high, huge class of error. And so it reached one question, how type equalities are propagated. And it's a lot topic. So let's imagine, thanks, oh, it will be complicated. So we have this type, we will have a lot of type, module type is just one type T to characterize the fact that we need to have a type T. And you have, for example, this functor that will just make something, just an abstract type T, make that will produce a value of T, and I did that take X and return X, okay? And the main question, so the type T exported in the module is abstract. So the main question, let's imagine that I have A and B that are just incarnation of the module make with type that are the same. Can I use a type produced by B inside a module produced by A and vice versa? And it's what we call strengthening and propagating type equalities. Does it type check? And it depends on the semantics of functors. So for example, if it succeeds, we call it applicative functors, and it's not related to category theory. And if it fails, we speak about generative functors. So we can just say that if f semi-input gives the same set of types, it's applicative. If semi-input gives different types, we call it generative. So in historically, OCaml module were applicative and standard ML module were generative. But since OCaml is very modern, now we can also define generative module in OCaml. We just had an empty module at the end and the module become generative. And in fact, both semantics are advantage. Applicative can be useful for data structure and stuff like that. Generative can be useful for holding effect and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a new proof that OCaml is very advanced in terms of module. But tracking type equality is always complicated. So let's imagine here, it's almost the same example, but here it's exactly the same example. I use the module M to produce A and B, and we are in an applicative context. Here I use struct type T equal int and struct type T equal int. So they are syntactic equivalent modules, but does it work in an applicative setup? And in fact, no. This one will fade in an applicative context. This one will succeed. And it's because even if modules are syntactically identical, OCaml use path to make the assumption that use path to clarify module equalities. Okay? And it can raise other questions. For example, let's imagine that I have an applicative functor that produces a generative functor, or a generative functor that produces an applicative functor. We will lose type equalities between different applications of module. Okay? Nice. So we have function. Next step is recursion. I will be very quick on recursion because it's relatively poorly defined. And we can have a mutual recursion between modules using module rec. So there is amusing trick that you can deal with recursion to transform a module type into a regular module, but I don't have the time to speak about that. We can have module extension, so it's so cool. We can use include to include for example, I have my module my list. I include the implementation of the module list, and I can add a new function, for example, this very not useful print int list function. Since it included, it will bring every definition from list inside my scope. So this is why I can use iter without using the path qualification. And which is nice, it's not just, I cannot just include a module path, I can also include a module expression. So I can directly include struct n and something and adding ascription, it's just a module expression, okay? So a side note on strengthening, just because it gives us the opportunity to see the following of C OCaml keyword. what we call strengthening is the fact that we can recover type equalities between different modules. So sometimes you decide to lose type equalities to make module more usable to compose a signature and stuff like that. And when we use module type off, that we see a previous slide ago, we lose strengthening. And so there is a way to keep strengthening even if you are using module type off. And it's this extraordinary sequence of six OCaml keyword you can use, include module type off structure include list end. So it's very nice. A new proof of the powerfulness of the OCaml module system. Everything is thing to be usable and it's awesome. We can have modus aliases and opens. So opens this, a lot of language make very, very complicated features just to be able to handle properly arithmetic operators. In F sharp, it called static elite type class resolve and SRTP. In Haskell, it was type classes. In Java, it was just cheating with predecessor operators. And with OCaml, it's local opening, so we can use an alias. So module L equal list is an alias from list to L. We can use open list, which will open, so just making available in the scope the definition inside list, but not re-export it. So it's a little bit the dual of inclusion. You can open at the level of a structure item, and you can open at the level of expression. So for people that say, you don't have arithmetic operator, it's very sad, you can just use float dot between parentheses, float operation of operator arithmetic without dot, and it's perfect. And exactly like for include, you can open your arbitrary structure. And so you can have, for example, private without MLE, just use an open struct. You make some definition inside your struct and it will not be exported. It can reach to something that we call the onshoring issue. So let's imagine that I define the T and I reference. So in open struct, I define a T, and outside the struct, I reference a type defined inside open struct. The type checker will say, I don't know what is A. So yeah, it's called an onshoring problem. So here there is two ways to interact with the value level. The first one is very new, and it was very hard to test it because the release was done 3 days ago. It's called module dependent function. So the main idea is we can give a module to a function and use it. So here is an example. For example, I have a function sort that will take a module comparable, and I will use this function compare to my list. If the module is now statically, it works. Before that, we need to use the second part that's still called first class module. First class module is the ID that there is an example of monad. For example, I can implement map taking a module monad, and I just use the shortcut from bind to define monad. Before that, we were using first class module. So first class module was the way to deal with dynamic module based on the runtime. So the fact that we can give module as an argument and return module make everything complicated. Since you can define a module on the body of a function, you need to hide every type and to use existential packing. So it was hard to use it as a function parameter. You need to introduce locally abstract type, and it was complicated, but it's still useful. So for example, let's imagine that I have this function let fx that will produce a module t, and I will return the module t. Okay. And so the module can be defined on value depending on the runtime, so it's nice. And we can also apply functor in the body of a function. This form is the fact that we are packing in an existential sense the module t. And we can unpack, obviously, since we can pack using, for example, this function, and with the keyword val, we unpack a packed module, and we can make a kind of dynamic dispatch to find the right module. And the module is now at runtime, so cool. So now we will see a lot of very small examples for fun and profit. So we can share behavior, we see that. We can just define, for example, our comparable module. It looks like the first example that we see, and after that we can extend int in 64 and float, and it's less error prone. We know that we have just one implementation that will share behavior between the three modules. It's very nice, no more plus dot that hurts some Haskell programmer. We can define the data structure, and in the standard library, we have a lot of data structure. So for example, we can define set, map, hash table, and we see the stack example. So it fits well with usually extension abstraction, and also with Eiger kernel polymorphism. So it's nice. We can make dependency injection. So let's imagine that I have a module type console that can print and read. I can, for example, make a program inside a module that will be parameterized by my console handler. And after that, I can make this very complicated program and interpret. To interpret it, we just use program. We give an implementation of the console, and you use your new module.run. And we can use module dependent function. So you give the module to the program, and it's almost the same program, but you don't need to have a functor indirection. It can be simplified using a reader monad. But in OCaml, we have other tools that make it easier, like a user-defined effect or object. We can have the exactly same example for the first class module, but with a more, we're going fast. So here is two implementations of a file system. There is the regular one that will just use the file system to read and write file, and we have the test file system to make available to make unit tests. And after that, we can use a complicated runtime decision to define if I'm in the context of an int test, I will use my module test. Otherwise, I will use my regular test. Okay? Yeah, thanks. We can use generative functor to make capability-based token, but I don't have time. we can define algebraic structure a little bit like Monad, but and it works. We can see that we can use the module-dependent approach or the functor approach. Since the syntax is pretty new, we probably need to learn how to build library with this new feature, and we probably change the set of useful library from the KML ecosystem, but I think that it's nice. We can have the famous tagless final encoding, proving that we have Eiger candidate type, so we can just define something that we will call semantic, which is the mix of integer and boolean. We can mix them using include and using destructive substitution in order to say that I just have one type, alpha t. And after that, we can, for example, write an evaluator and a pretty printer. We have a functor, we can define a program. It's a program that can be pretty print or evaluate, and it's a way to make program very complicated, but you can. You can have, for example, the last one, it's very fun. It comes from an ex-colleague called Frederic Bourg. And I call the example first class module exaggeration because we can, for example, try to define a type T based on the value of an expression. So it's like runtime reflection without the runtime nature and with type safety. So the main idea is we just define a type, a module type T, which just have a type T, which is abstract. And since you have existential packing, we can have this function tie, which introduce a locally abstract type with a value constrained by the fact that it's locally abstract. We make a type equality between the locally abstract type and our module type T. And after that, we produce a new module, which is a module struct type with just one type T, which is from the type A that was packed here. And after that, I can have my expression. I can create a new module tie, which is val of tie my expression, and it will produce my type T will be tied to T, and it will be the type int. Superb. In the article, it's way more complicated because it was written in this sense. So it's, for me, a clear demonstration that the module language of OCaml is a veritable module language. It's more smart than my implementation, but at least it gives the type, my type, inside the scope without needing to make type annotation. So it's a beautiful example, not very useful in the real world, but very beautiful. So there is some work in progress. So the first one is the notion of signature avoidance. So sometimes when you are in a language which is principally typed inferred, you lose some information and some type equalities or some type because the way that you are defining your type, you lose it. And so the main idea is to fix that using something called ZipML. So it's the way to deal with focus of modules using zippers. And you can have quantifier over type that should be export or not. There is the second one, which is related to what they call transparent ascription. So usually in OCaml, we have opaque ascription. The main idea is we hide totally implementation details and we keep types abstract unless someone asks explicitly to make it a manifest type, so a concrete type. And with transparent ascription, we preserve every type equalities for the implementation. So why transparent ascription are very useful? It's because if you have that, we can have modular implicit, which is a very old paper from 2012. And we need, it's the implementation of ad hoc polymorphism, so it's like type classes, but without global coherence. I know that in Scala, they call that type classes, but because Scala community. And if you are interested, there is a conference about Scala, the last one about effect as capabilities, which is neat encoding of effect when you don't have continuation. And yes, 1 minute is perfect. When you have transparent ascription, it's necessary to be able to implement modular implicit because the function resolution rely on type equalities. So if you have that feature, you can have modular implicit and make OCaml the most beautiful mainstream language of the world. Thanks a lot for your presentation. I have a very huge conclusion that it's just OCaml is so cool and you should definitely use it to make software. Thanks a lot.
I think we have time for questions.
We have time for questions.
Awesome.
I think your goal, you succeeded in sharing your passion.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
I'm convinced. So are there any questions?
Or remarks?
Yeah, is there any style guide? So if I start riding on Camel today, is there any style guide on how I should use all these features? Like, are there features I should not use as maybe a beginner or for certain kind of tasks? So is there,
can you repeat the question for
me? Yeah, is there style guide to use the huge set of beautiful features in the module language? Yes, a lot, but it depends on the company where you work. So there is no, probably. But I have a very advanced advice for using module. You should definitely avoid recursive module. And I said that we have type that can be abstract. We can have module type that can be abstract. And usually you should avoid to use that. It's an answer to your question?
Yeah.
Thanks.
On one of your slides, you were showing how to resolve type inconsistencies with the path module. Could you explain a bit more about how path resolution works?
It was too much slider. Wow, so professional. this one.
Yes, use the path to clarify.
Yeah, exactly. So here the compiler is able to say that those two types are strictly equivalent because they share the same path. So it's a very short path here, but it can be a longer path with components. In this case, there is no notion of path. So it's very hard to the compiler to decide if module are equivalent or not. We can say that in this particular example, it should be possible to track it because there is just one type, which is a manifest type because it has a concrete type. So we should probably find a way to have a corner case to say, in this specific case, we can preserve the fact that module are equivalent, but it's a kind of corner case inside the implementation. So currently they just use path in order to see it's the same module. Path or path abbreviation.
And you can control the path environment, you could have it resolved differently based on?
I'm not sure to, so the question was, can I manage the path to change the result? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure to understand the question.
That's basically it. Is this dependent on the visibility of certain modules, the resolution mechanism?
Ah, yes, but if you try to use a path that is not available in the environment, you will not type check because the module is not available.
Here, just to clarify, the path is going to be m.t, right?
The path is m,
okay,
of the module, and the path of the type t inside the module m is m.t, but it uses the module path in the functor application.
Okay. Alright, thank you.
No more question?
Let me just, the slide where you have the generic list, which get specialized in int and float list.
In inclusion and
extension? I think it's right at the beginning, so
it's just a bit. Maybe I can just ask a question. But like, you use twice type T, once when you use the module and make it concrete, and the second time when it's still defined with type t equal int or type t. Why do you need to say twice that the type t has a specific type?
Because if I do not put the t inside the signature, it will not be exported. You know?
It should be just a generic, like an abstract module.
You can try some kind of encoding for that, but it's a little bit complicated. And no, the fact that you need to repeat the type in the signature and in the structure is just for encapsulation reason. What is in your signature will be exported, so if you not export the type inside the signature, you cannot use it to qualify the you can say that, hey, I have a function empty, which is an alpha t, since alpha t does not exist. And we can say that, yes, but if I define type inside the signature, it should be available inside the structure, but we don't know. I think that there is no way to make it properly usable if you decide to make decision for the user. So you need to repeat it because it's nice to repeat stuff. It makes stuff clear.
Okay.
Excellent. Now we are out of time. You have to take it offline. Yeah. Sevi is very happy to talk about
Thank
it
you very
the whole
much.
Day. Thank you again.